and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Has Trump's phone diplomacy achieved a breakthrough ending the conflict in Ukraine? It's too early to say. However, the terms and conditions of engagement have been established. A final peace agreement must be formulated before any ceasefire can happen. That is, the root causes of the conflict must be addressed. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, Ulrike Gureau in Berlin. She is professor of political science as well as co-director of the European Democracy Lab. In Macedonia, we have Liljana Vankovska. She's an academic and researcher. And in Plymouth, we have Patrick Henningsen. He is the editor and founder of the 21st Century Wire. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with Patrick in Plymouth. Well, let's do the post-mortem. The telephone diplomacy got a lot of attention. Trump got most of it. That's how he likes it, and that's why he was doing it. After his over two-hour phone call with Putin, both came out with a readout. Very positive, very constructive, pretty much what we would have expected. I only learned that he had talked to Zelensky moments before he called Trump, which I thought was kind of curious at the very least, and maybe other European leaders. And then he did. He went and reconnected with them after the conversation with the Russian president. I don't know, Patrick. I mean, I don't know what was achieved because it's open-ended at this point. Trump seems to be putting political capital on a dealing with the root causes, the title of this program. If he is, it's going to be very hard. It's going to be perilous, but it's the only way to end this crisis. And I think he's beginning to understand it. So I left with, you know, it was a positive side of the ledger. Your thoughts, Patrick?
I'm with you, Peter. First of all, I'll just say we are happy and we should be grateful that there is diplomacy and there is some type of communication between the United States and Moscow. That's just first and foremost. Forget about, you know, whether the negotiations are rocky or getting diverted or, you know, seem to be getting reset back to zero every couple of weeks. Put that aside. They're talking. That's good. Now, in terms of the telephone diplomacy, Peter, I'm a little bit dubious about the utility of this. I realize he needed to plug something into the news cycle with the amount of plates that the White House is spinning between Iran, trade wars with China, and the situation in Ukraine and Gaza as well with Israel. They have a lot on their plate. That's an understatement, surely. But I don't think this telephone diplomacy, it's great. It'll make headlines for 24 hours, but there's no substance to it. That's the problem. And in fact, I'll make another point, Peter, it's actually counterproductive to negotiations because you're projecting your positions way ahead, and you're almost like kind of imposing a narrative on the Ukrainians. That's not exactly a great idea with this unstable regime in Kiev, but also with Moscow. If you're playing chess with the Russians, Peter, the last thing you want to be doing is publicly telegraphing every single move and what you might want to do in 6 months or a year. So they have a lot of catching up to do to hit that root causes narrative, Peter. The question is, what damage can be done in 6 months or a year while Washington's still trying to figure out whether to take a true realist take on this conflict or keep bouncing around with short-term tactical talking points?
Well, I'm sure a lot of damage will be attempted. I have no doubt about that. Ulrike, let me go to you now. Keeping in mind what Patrick just said, however, a counter argument can be the Russians have made their position very clear. As a matter of fact, having the talks back in Istanbul again, you know, and having essentially the same negotiating team again, it's picking up where they left off, obviously taking into account the facts on the ground that have happened over the last 3 years. While the West plays with narrative games and memes, the Russian position really hasn't changed that much. And I think that is one of the reasons why they constantly say root causes. I know it's made fun of. I mean, the New York Times did it in the last news cycle. But if you want to see this conflict come to an end, you have to take the root causes seriously. Go ahead in Berlin.
Well, I mean, the thing is that the West is not united because that's what you are saying is precisely what is the coverage of the German press. And it's all sort of Putin is delaying the game. Putin does not want real peace just because I think there's no understanding that the root causes should be tackled because nobody wants to talk about the root causes, right? So what we see and what we have been seeing in the last sort of days is also that there is a sidelining of Trump. I mean, there has been this telephone diplomacy. This is the US-Russia direct. There is no more France, Damir, Merz. And we have seen that Chancellor Merz took what happened in the phone conversations as an basically explanation to further support Ukraine. So there is a sidelining of the three major heads of Europe, Macron, Starmer, and that's my landline ringing now. Sorry. I keep talking. I hope it will stop soon. So So I think for me as a European, that's one of the biggest problems, that Europe is sidelined, although this is a conflict that should tackle root causes, and especially root causes on the European continent in the relationship between Russia and Europe. And we see other very nasty things, just to say this, but, you know, in a way, hijacking the Russian capital, this question about not only the interest rates, but the Russian capital, which is clearly against international law. So you see, that is my reading of it, that there is a European torpedoing of the American attempt to do this phone conversation. So whatever we see in the Russian-American dynamic, you can clearly say that there's a European sort of tendency to not make it happen, to make maximal conditions, and to not to sideline the US. And for me as European, this is very bad.
Yeah, well, I agree. And Biljana, explain to me, because, yes, I mean, the Europeans are being sidelined because they deserve to be sidelined, because they're the ones that are not talking about peace. You can think whatever you want about Russia or whatever you want about Zelensky and all of that. The goal should be to end the conflict. Now, we have terms and conditions on both sides. It's time now to get down to brass tacks and do it, instead of having these foolish clowns in Western Europe angling for what? I don't understand essentially what their interest is in promoting a continued conflict on their own continent. And you have two outside powers, Russia and the United States, that want to end it. For me, it's the world turned upside down.
Yes, I agree. The Europeans are playing the guys who comes from Venus, not from Mars, that are peacemakers that come from this so-called peace project, are now playing a role of peace spoilers. Actually, they are preventing any effort to make to get close to some kind of meaningful negotiations. But on the other hand, I have to mention something about this phone diplomacy. I agree that Mr. Trump is a man who wants to make news and wants to be in the focus. That's his style. And we all accept this even new rhetoric, talking about a serious matter as diplomacy, especially during crisis and war, is. We accept this new rhetoric about phone diplomacy or social media diplomacy. That shows how much degraded and outcast is real diplomacy, something that we badly need as times like this, not only in Ukraine, but also in Gaza and elsewhere. Even if I may mention the way that these negotiations over Gaza go, they have much more sensitivity and secrecy. We are not updated about everything step by step, but some people are working behind the scene.
Are you surprised that when the former German foreign minister, 360 Baerbock, says she doesn't care what her constituents think? I mean, that's just, you know, taking off the mask and saying the truth. They just, they abhor democracy. Jump right in Berlin. Ulrika, you want to say something? Go ahead.
I said in the last time, there's no West because Europe and the US are Trump and the administration are more or less divided on this question, but there's no Europe neither. You have Orban, You have Hungary, you have FICO, Slovakia, you have Romania, which does not want to be a NATO soft headquarter. You have the whole European South, meaning the Spaniards, demonstrating against that war. You have huge demonstrations in Italy and in Greece. So basically, Europe comes down to Kaja Kallas, the Baltic states, and the Estonians, basically being totally hijacking the EU Commission system. And that is the disaster, because, I mean, not only you have critical voices in most of the EU countries. I mean, look at Emmanuel Todd and his very good book, or look at Thomas Fazi in Italy. I mean, we had 600,000 demonstrations in Spain recently against the war. We had as much demonstrations in Italy. I'm doing many peace, demonstrations in Germany. So the real question is, how could we end up, we Europeans, in a system of the EU, you know, the EU system, that is basically a deal between Kaja Kallas, the high representative, who is imposing sort of Baltic thinking on that conflict, on a whole European Union, which has much broader interests and much more diverting opinions. And
well,
I think,
it only shows that if you hire clowns, you get a circus, okay? I mean, this is what I'm getting at here. You know, Patrick, really what is not discussed, which is really what this is all about, is because of NATO expansion, the United States found itself, not officially, but unofficially, at war with Russia. That is a reason to shut this war down before, you know, because we've had nightmare scenarios. Remember, it was like 6 weeks, 2 months ago, the New York Times was talking about the probability of a nuclear exchange. Are these people out of their mind?
And this is why, like, I hate to say it, Peter, but the negotiations, at least in the current form, have been set up to fail for the simple reason of this. The United States, put Europe off to the side for a moment. The United States is not honest about the nature of this conflict and their role in it as an instigator, as the lead country in NATO. And because of that, the whole discussion, the way it's framed, is completely skewed. They're talking about it like this is a neighborhood fight between the Ukrainians and the Russians, and we're just here to help and stop the bloodbath, says Trump on Twitter. And
but that is inherently the problem here, is that Trump is trying to be a mediator when the United States is a co-belligerent.
Exactly, Peter. And the other thing is the skewing of the narrative that Russia is incurring all of these casualties and dead soldiers and the Ukrainians aren't. That lie also feeds into the mischaracterization of the narrative, which means that because the West can't say that to their own constituents, their own audience. They can't admit, A, they started it, B, Ukraine has been devastated by it, and Russia hasn't been devastated to nearly the degree or incurred nearly the losses that Ukraine have. So Ukraine is losing and Russia is winning. The West can't bring themselves to admit that. And that informs the discussions and the negotiations. It's going to fail for the West until reality comes. And reality is going to come in the form of surrender terms eventually.
Yeah, and they're going to postpone it as long as they can, because once the reckoning comes, all of these clowns will be out of a job very, very quick. All right, folks, I'm going to jump in here and we're going to go to a quick break. And after that quick break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine. Okay, let's go back. Let's go back to Berlin. Ulrika, I really liked what Patrick was saying as we entered the first part of the program, because for the West to really rationally, pragmatically, honestly talk about the root causes of it, then it goes to NATO expansion. It is going back to, and I'll run them off real quick, not one step east, NATO expansion, the coup in February of 2014, the Minsk Accords, the unilateral withdrawal of Ukraine at the behest of the West from the Istanbul talks in 2020. You're going to have to talk about all of those things if you want to end this conflict. And on this program, we've talked about every single one of them in real time. And then years later, oh, the United States was involved in the coup. Oh my goodness, years later. And then Minsk, it was like, did you know that Macron and Hollande, they betrayed it? I mean, this happens. We did it all in real time. And then years later, somebody gets a Pulitzer Prize for saying what we said in real time years before. Okay. All right. That's my diatribe about Western media. But the fact of the matter is, if this conflict is going to come to an end and have a permanent peace, you're going to have to deal with the root causes. And when you do that, there's only one guilty party here. Go ahead.
Look, I mean, it's not only media, it's also science, because I have been fired from a university because I wrote two books about it. And then basically I was out of university. Yeah. So it's media and university. And I think that's also important. Yeah. Because we always argue with science. Yeah. So let me answer that way. What you say is right, correct. And the problem is that the West is finished. Yeah, because that's precisely what it is about. I mean, this conflict has been so much, you know, boosted, yeah, like sort of the Ukrainian-Russian conflict, and the West has been so much engaging in we need to win it. I mean, all this framing Macron recently had when Merz visited Macron, Siegfrieden. I mean, this is a wording from the 20th century of First World War, right? Siegfrieden, military victory, yeah? And nobody's out there to define whatever military victory about the Russians may mean, yeah? With some French hardest, whatever weapons, yeah. So, it's really a cognitive dissonance, yeah, from the West. And the cognitive dissonance is we cannot face reality because we lost it. And the real thing is how to explain my children. You know, I mean, this is like when you explain children something, whatever, like the Christmas man is not coming or is not real. There is such a turnaround to do in terms of admitting and confession. So of we got it wrong from the first place. We did it wrong in 89. We should have hand reaching to the Russians. The Russians were sort of doing it, Yeltsin and Kohl, then Putin in the Bundestag, and then we lost it all, and then we downrode Putin, and then came the Minsk agreements and whatever. I mean, they would need to admit that this was prepared in the first place since long. That there's all this McKinder strategy and Minsk agreement, and perhaps with Yulia Tymoshenko in 2004 already started, and then they took another 10 years to make Maidan happen, and so on and so forth. But what do you want? I mean, you have now audiences, I mean, public in Western countries who just do not know history. And if you just say Putin is Hitler and the Russians are nasty, I mean, I have been a professor at a university. So at university, you expect sort of the smart young generation, yeah? And even these people never traveled to Russia, don't speak Russian, all speak English, all have been to New York, and they are completely bathing in an whatever NATO controlled public opinion.
Well,
yeah.
Ulrika, so you bring really up a really problem. You bring up a really interesting point. Let me go to Biljana about this, because I have come to the conclusion that this whole Ukraine project farce for the Europeans is some kind of unifying principle. It's something that the leadership can rally around in what they believe is Europe, which of course is their Europe, where they're comfortable. They want to perpetuate their power. They want to pass their power down to their next generation. It's a unity principle for them, because neoliberalism in every other sense has failed the European continent and its people. So it's anti-Russia. We have to spend money on defense. How that's going to help their social welfare programs, I don't know. Oh, it doesn't make you think about immigration. It doesn't make you think about how the power of the state should be censoring dissident voices. I mean, it's kind of a unifying principle. If you have this common enemy, you can get away with a lot. Go ahead.
Yes, fear-mongering can be very profitable in political, economic, and other social terms, and it is what we are witnessing right now in Europe. But on the other hand, I have to insist on these root causes, as we mentioned, and my colleagues in the panel as well. The root causes are actually in the involvement of NATO And we know that NATO is made of United States of America. 70-80% of the military might and input into the alliance comes from Washington. So when Mr. Trump invented the idea of peace plan, that was a way how to avoid acknowledging the bare truth that NATO lost first in Afghanistan, and now in Ukraine, which means United States lost equally the war. And now we're seeing the peacemaker in the White House who works against the old Latin slogan, the maxim, nemo judex in causa sua. One cannot be an honest broker, a peacemaker, an arbiter or mediator, or pretending not to have anything to do with Ukraine. We still remember Victoria Nuland and all the things about Euromaidan, as it was already mentioned. So everybody is hypocritical here. So we need an honest broker in a form of another state entity, and I would think of China, for example, as someone who knows what diplomacy means, what patience means, what experience means, because peace, real peace process, genuine peace process, calls for a lot of time. I come from a region that suffered a lot through wars and conflicts throughout the Yugoslavia's dissolution. So we still feel the legacy of this conflict. It will take so much time and effort to really come back to some normalization of the situation in Europe and globally. And at the same time, we have in the White House, I call him, sorry for my being honest, I call him Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He's at one moment a peacemaker, at another moment he's threatening to Russia.
Well, Biljana, you bring up
you
bring up such a good point, Patrick. Similarly, I wanted to ask the same thing. I mean, we just hope that Trump has staying power to keep pushing this forward, because when it comes to Russia, it's like pushing on an open door. They want to move forward on this. They want to have negotiations in light of facts on the ground. But Trump is going to have to keep pressuring the Europeans. He's going to have to read them the Riot Act. We don't know what he said to these leaders, okay? Apparently, the British Prime Minister wasn't part of that. Even the New York Times reported it. It wasn't true. He wasn't part of that conversation, which tells me a lot. Trump, if he wants to win, and if it's going to be his win, I could care less, okay? I want to see the war to come to an end. But if it's going to be a win, he's going to have to curate and procure this win. It's not going to be free. Patrick.
You know, Peter, I think Donald Trump has the right intentions. He's got the right general ideas. He's moving in generally the right direction. But if I was to be 100% honest with you, I don't think he has the people with the skill set that can manage to pull this diplomatic high wire act off. If you look at previous administrations, you look at the team around Jimmy Carter, the team around Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan could pick up the phone and get Richard Nixon in for a private meeting to get advice on how to deal with this country or that leader, Henry Kissinger, Zbigniew Brzezinski, even the team around Bill Clinton, arguably were titans in comparison. George W. Bush, Larry Wilkinson, Colin Powell, these types of geopolitical thinkers, seasoned statespeople with great experience. Donald Trump, I don't see that caliber of people around, so I don't think they're going to be able to execute any of this stuff, and that's a big problem. To deal with the Europeans is really complicated. To get Europe to, you know, kind of agree around some principles other than we need to, wage a war forever against Russia, there's all sorts of other things you need to get them on board with. And, you know, going back to the Munich Security Council, Peter, I don't think J.D. Vance's technique of browbeating the Europeans is necessarily very good. In fact, in a way, it's disingenuous, because the Trump administration is ignoring the fact of the entire post-World War II U.S.-led liberal international world order, which they profited massively off of by creating all these dollar zones, euro dollar zones around Europe. And that's helped to sustain the empire with the world reserve currency. Let's be honest. about U.S. history, about the economics of everything. And then we can move forward and, you know, design a new security architecture and decide what the America's new position is going to be vis-a-vis all these other great powers and in a multipolar world. I don't see that type of intelligence right now in Washington, Peter.
I unfortunately have to agree with you, my friend. Yes, let me go. Well, I'll give the last word to our guest in Berlin. What happened to European elites? Because I remember a time when they were the wise ones. They had gray hair. They had experience. They remembered the Second World War. Some of them even remembered the First World War. None of these people have that kind of gravitas. None of them. No one in leadership in Europe has gravitas. Go ahead.
So
one
first,
minute. Go ahead.
I ask for everything that Patrick has said, I wouldn't say perhaps it's not only about the team of Trump. Yeah, it's also that he is basically blocked by the other half of the Americas, yeah, which is the Federal Reserve and Pentagon and so on. So he's basically struggling against the other half of his own country. And I think that makes things very, very complicated for the Trump team. Yeah, with respect to Europe, I think you are right. I mean, I'm European. I'm German, born in 64. I don't recognize my country again. I would wonder where's Willy Brandt, where's Bruno Kreisky, where's Olaf Palme, where are the people who understood that we need to do a peace with the Russians and not against the Russians. I'm missing the Franco-German relationship. I'm missing the handshake with the Poles. I mean, I'm this country, Germany, which is basically the biggest country, economic terms, political terms within Europe, is totally failing, not only in
all
its
right, that is a topic all by itself, yeah, which we need to discuss on this program, but we've run out of time. I want to thank my guests in Berlin, Macedonia, and in Plymouth. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.